So, guys, have you ever actually seen this episode in which Fonzie jumps the shark on Happy Days?
I've never seen the whole episode.
I've never seen an episode of Happy Days.
I actually haven't seen Happy Days at all either.
Oh my goodness. Well, it's pretty outrageous because he was, he's supposed to be this cool guy and he gets on water skis and he's still got his leather jacket on and shorts and jumps over a shark and it's like totally ridiculous. But I can't believe that you've never seen it. You got to go back and watch it. Although in context, not so much context if you haven't seen how Fonzie was supposed to be this cool hip guy the whole time and then he's in shorts and a leather jacket. Anyway, I think we should do this podcast thing.
Hi, I'm Frank Spotnitz. I produce The X-Files, and you're listening to The X-Cast.
I'm your host, Paige Schechter, and today's show looks to be a lively roundtable discussion on a couple of topics. First, did the X-Files ever jump the shark, and if so, when? And secondly, what would you change about the X-Files if you could? We've got a lot of interesting responses from our social media denizens, but first we'll mull these questions over with a glittering array of X-Cast patrons. Marlene Stemme, Naomi Miller, and Michael Petty. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so Naomi and Michael are X-Cast podcast rookies, so I hope we'll treat you gently so you don't get a bad impression.
I appreciate that.
Treat me gently, too. I've just done one.
Yes, and I was going to say, and Marlene has just done one. But this should be a really interesting one because it's a topic that people talk about a lot. Before we get into each person's picks, let's point out there's a couple of ways to view jumping the shark. Now, originally, the term came to be because Fonzie, in leather jacket and shorts, water skied over a shark on Happy Days. So for some, jumping the shark means a specific moment in which someone said, this TV show is not what it used to be. But in the modern vernacular, I think it's come to have more of an analytical meaning about when a series started to decline. So let's get into it. I'm going to start with Marlene because I liked your description of a lot of potential jumps. I believe the exact words you used were a perpetual process of shark jumping and unjumping, starting at Fight the Future and ending at My Struggle 4.
Yes, that does sound like what I said. I would start with Fight the Future. Mainly just in that era, I don't really see some of the things that they did as being congruent with the tone or the characters. I think it's a great, fun film. I wouldn't say that that movie itself is the shark jump. I honestly think some of the showing of the alien and changing the black oil into an actual alien creature changed a little bit of the way they were going with the mythology and made it a little bit Hollywood. And I guess that's what I would say about the Fight the Future shark jump in general, is that it just made it a little bit Hollywood. And I don't think that I think it took a while for them to recover from that. I think that season six kind of followed a little bit. There were moments in season six when I just thought, what is this? Like with Mulder dancing in front of the mirror and Dreamland and some things like that. That would be sort of going with your more specific description of jumping the shark, where you look at it and you think, this is not what I was watching before. And I, you know, over time I came to appreciate some of the creativity and the themes that they were doing in season six. But at that moment, that's when it kind of occurred. It took me out of the show and I thought, what is this that I'm watching? And then just going through, I also think that I don't know. I think that Scully's pregnancy, to me, I can't help but say that that is the major sort of inextricable, turned out to be inextricable shark jump. I think there were many times when they could have written themselves out of that conundrum, and sometimes when they did, but they always seemed to just, like, leap over that same shark again and again. and it changed. I think that there, you know, also times when that brought about sort of the downfall of the show, in my mind. I know a lot of people now are very fond of season 8, but I just see it as being this, like, sort of, like, long character slide after Scully's pregnancy, and I just think there are a lot of things that could have been done differently. But her saying that she was pregnant and sort of taking the character in that more, not necessarily, because it always been personal, but I think making the personal drama the plot line, to me, was like the massive shark jump after all, like the little kind of shark jumps that happened earlier in season 6. Like, that was the great white shark jump.
I know Naomi's going to have rebuttal, at least on Fight the Future there.
I love Fight the Future. I don't know, maybe it's because it was my introduction to The X-Files, so I'm very sentimental about it. I saw it in theaters at age 11, and it just sucked me in. So it works on that level as a, you know, an introduction, especially to a young person. I don't know if I were to have seen it as an adult, it would have grabbed me the same way.
So your first X-Files experience was the movie Fight the Future?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, 20 years ago. It really worked for me in that you have the conspiracy, the excitement of the conspiracy, the death of the well-manicured man, lots of great X-Files tropes in one movie. You have the manifestation of the alien, which we hadn't seen before. So that made it kind of bigger and better for the big screen. So that's why the beginning, for several reasons, is the jump the shark moment for me. It doesn't do anything new. So coming off of Fight the Future, I was so excited to have a show. And it didn't provide any new excitement. There was no, the alien was the same, so that wasn't a reveal. The dynamic between Mulder and Scully didn't seem to make sense in that they were kind of, they weren't on the same page. There was a theme of mistrust between them that kind of came out of left field after Fight the Future. And also, I have such an attachment to the aesthetics of the first 5 seasons that part of me has to call the beginning the jump the shark moment, because it's the move to LA, and the show never looked the same again. It lost that cloudy, that air of the X-Files that we all are sentimental about. It became bright and sunny, which just never felt like X-Files to me.
Okay, I think Michael agrees with Marlene definitely about season 8. So you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I definitely do. But I do have to say, I also love Fight the Future, and that was also my introduction to the X-Files as a kid.
Oh,
I watched,
cool.
Yeah, I actually watched it on DVD with my mom and dad when I was pretty young. I was born in 95, so I was a little late to the X-Files party, but I just love Fight the Future. To this day, I still will go back and rewatch it often, so I don't know. Maybe it is a sentimental thing. But in terms of my Jump the Shark moment, I don't know if it's a moment as much as it is an idea. I think season 8 is, for me, where X-Files really jumps the shark, because you didn't totally write Mulder off of the show, but he isn't as big a part of the show. You change the conspiracy so that it's less involving alien bounty hunters in the syndicate and more involving new super soldiers. You introduce new characters that had no basis in the show originally. Season 8 and 9 really pushed the limits on what the X-Files was supposed to be and maybe what it should be. And I think that's part of why maybe I liked the revival series a little bit, was because, or not a little bit, I liked it a lot, because it actually was Mulder and Scully back together again, doing what I had watched them do in the first 6 or 7 seasons of the show. So personally, I've always felt like X-Files probably should have ended at season 7, and they should have just wrote that season as a final season, especially with how you find out what happens to Samantha, and, you know, Requiem goes back full circle to the pilot. I think it would have been an easy out for the show, in my opinion.
Well, it certainly makes sense. I'm a huge defender of season 8 and 9 because I love Doggett and Reyes, And I think that the show could have gone on, the X-Files as a concept, X-Files as what they're investigating, could have gone in another direction. But the problem there is all the people who are invested in X-Files only for Mulder and Scully. Like Michael just said, you're watching for Mulder and Scully, you're not really interested. And you have to spin it off a little better than they did by having, you know, like Mulder in a handful of episode and Scully pining over Mulder the whole time. And you have to do it cleaner like Star Trek does it rather than the way they did it.
Yeah, and I don't think that would have bothered me as much if you had just totally rebranded and just written Mulder and Scully out completely. That maybe wouldn't have bothered me as much because it would have felt like a different show and it would have felt like you would have been able to jump off. But because they do continue on into the next two seasons, and again, I really do like a lot of seasons 8 and 9. I think there's a lot of good stuff there, and I love Doggett and Reyes. But in terms of leading the show, in terms of what you've invested in for so long, it just didn't feel like a good payoff to me.
Right.
I thought that they was. See, I totally agree with what you said earlier, Michael, about just the change in season 8. And there are aspects of it that I like, and there are a couple things in season 9 that I like as well. But to me, it was more that ending of season 7, and then also I think they just changed like the nature of Mulder and Scully going into season 8. I think that there are things they could have pulled from season 7, even when David Duchovny left, and done that a little differently rather than having it be, like Paige said, Scully pining after Mulder. And I feel like this whole search for Mulder idea could have been done a little bit more in keeping with how I saw their characters. And then when Mulder came back, I almost liked it less, and I was excited that he was coming back, but it sort of went in a totally different direction, and it went more in this, what I see is sort of this domestic direction, you know. And I was like, what is this with like the whole Pizza Man episode and all of that? It was just not, it didn't work for me to not see Mulder and Scully primarily as investigators having debates and sharing ideas and that type of thing. And that, I guess, too, I like Doggett and I came to like Reyes, okay. I appreciate what they did for the show. And I don't mean to offend you, Paige, anyway.
No, you know.
Or offend Doggett and Reyes. But I thought they did a serviceable job, but they were kind of like one of several possible pairings that could have worked. Whereas to me, Mulder and Scully, as sappy as it sounds, are kind of like one of a kind. And it was they were interested in ideas. And it was that debate of ideas and worldviews that to me drove a lot of the show along with the mythology, you know. So I could see having a spinoff. I just think the way that it went and that it sort of dredged us through the soap opera was the part that really was like the end of that. And I also loved the revival, probably for the same reasons that you noted, because it kind of got back to that same spirit that we had seen earlier.
Well, and I think also for me, I got really invested in the X-Files originally because of the conspiracy. My dad actually had these DVD sets, these four DVD sets that were all the conspiracy episodes. So you had the abduction, you had the black oil, the third one that I can't remember, Colonists and Super Soldiers. And every time we'd get to Super Soldiers, I would kind of lose interest because everything that the conspiracy had been built up to be by the time season 7 ended, I mean, it was, by that point, it was pretty much done. By that point, it was pretty much wrapped up, and Super Soldiers just felt like an attempt to jumpstart it and bring it back, but it didn't work for me as well, especially when you have the smoking man gone, you have, I mean, Krycek wasn't totally gone at that point, but just the whole idea of the syndicate and the conspiracy. That's what got me into the X-Files, and I just felt like they were trying too hard to keep that element in when it clearly was done.
I keep going back to something Tony said in an earlier podcast about how the show had outgrown its characters, and that presents a really challenging situation to the writers. How do you explain Mulder and Scully being separated for a year in a credible way? I don't think they did that, which is so disappointing. How do you explain Scully giving up a baby that she's had with her for, what was it, at least a few months? That's a pretty tough thing to justify. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they did that. And same with the conspiracy. It's kind of like a character that the show outgrew. And they didn't transition to a new bad guy effectively.
Right.
Is that poor writing, or is that just because they had exhausted their themes, they were burnt out? 9 years is a long time. Can't blame them.
You know, when the show didn't have a set course, they didn't have a Bible, And I think that this is where that hurts them. You know, they didn't have a plan of where they were going to go and an organization of what was going to be uncovered when and when certain things were going to wrap up. And so then they started, you know, after they finally resolve Samantha to many people's dissatisfaction. I really like those two episodes, but a lot of people did not like them. It's because even that resolution wasn't in their mind when they started all of it. So if you have no ending point, you know what they say about writing, you have to know what your finale is before you start writing.
Yeah, and I know that Chris Carter is not fond of that style. You know, he prefers the sort of exploration and excavation to having like a set direction. And I think, I don't know, I mean, I think we saw a lot of merit to that earlier on in the show. One of my friends that I was discussing this with said that one of the things that happened early on is like whenever they did do something that was either in error or didn't make sense, they owned it. And then later on, it seems like they're just kind of covering up. That was her idea, that they weren't really owning the maybe the shark jumps, if you will, that happened later. And it also seems that going from like what you're talking about, from the sort of like freewheeling style of not having a plan to almost, I don't know, it almost seemed overplotted or overplanned somewhat toward the end in season 8. And I think that was kind of jarring too. And it's a different mental set, you know, maybe they weren't prepared to kind of see that through. I don't know.
Yeah, because they were working a different way and not in the X-Files style we had become accustomed to. Okay, for me, I'm going to do my specific instant incident shark jump, and then I'm going to tag on to one of the mailbaggers who said the more general thing better than I could. So the 10th season is a big shark jump for me, and my impetus for saying that is because Cigarette Smoking Man totally incinerated to end the regular run. All of a sudden, he's back. So there had been disappointments before, but that felt like the biggest cheat I've ever seen in my life.
I agree. I think it was one of the X-Cast reviews after my struggle. I want to say it was Andrew Blaker, and I don't want to misquote him, but he said something about the Cigarette Smoking Man dying or how he died. And then he said, or excuse me, was badly burned. You know? And I think that element of comedy kind of was how everybody dealt with that, maybe.
Well, you know, you obviously want a Bill Davis in your mix because he's so good and he brought so much texture to the part. But where is the part where you stop believing in it? You know, you don't want to believe anymore. And I think that was mine. So on Facebook, people overwhelmingly said season 9 was the shark jump, and that was more than twice the runner-up season 8. 3 people said it never jumped the shark. The Twitter poll, 53% went for season 9, 24% for season 8. So it's about the same thing. I think everybody is pretty close to each other in how they're regarding it, at least the, you know, our fans on XCast.
Ironic, since season 9 actually has the episode Jump the Shark in it.
No, and no one voted for Jump the Shark, which, you know, that's a little wink wink. And there are people who make reference in the mailbag to the fact that killing the lone gunman is obviously a shark jump, which you can't discount that. I mean,
I almost think expectation at that point was just different, you know. I have a friend that called Sunshine Days a massive shark jump, and maybe it would have been if we weren't kind of like nearing the end and it's the second to last episode. So I don't know. I mean, I think maybe people are a different mind. If you see an episode called Jump the Shark, you just, you know, it is what it is. I don't know.
So is your friend Danny the Geek or a different friend? Because Danny the Geek in our mailbag said Sunshine Days.
Oh, no, it's somebody else. That's
oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So more than one vote for Sunshine Days. Okay, I'm going to read some mailbag and, you know, jump in when something strikes you. Okay, Winston Pear, and he's got my vote. He voted for season 7, and I do as well. I suppose it's easy to point out the weird, although not entirely unemotionally affecting conclusion to the sister storyline, but more so for me, starting with Rush, it's just a lengthy string of very mediocre episodes, a much higher percentage than any season that came before, a steady decline, more like a degrading of the shark. I totally agree with him. Although I like the sister storyline resolution, so I don't agree on that front.
I do too.
I don't, sorry. I was waiting for that big reveal of how Samantha ties into a larger conspiracy. What I love about the X-Files conspiracy is that it keeps getting bigger and bigger. You think it's on, you know, some regional level. No, it's on the federal level. No, it's on the global level. No, it's on the, you know, interspecies, interplanetary level. And with Samantha, and this is, it's kind of cool as a creative choice in that it's so unexpected, but you just go back to, actually, it's just a, you know, some crazy guy, things happen. It's not really as big as you thought it was. And what made the X-Files so exciting to me is that feeling of, wow, it's so much bigger than I thought it was.
See, I thought season 7, I didn't like Rush. I didn't think I thought that was pretty mediocre, but I liked a lot of the lighter episodes, and I hadn't liked a lot of the lighter episodes at that time in season 6, but I almost thought season 7 was a little bit of a relief and a little bit of like Mulder and Scully going back to their more unassuming days in season 1. And for me, that two-parter was part of that. Like that, I don't know. I took it as a sort of like the denouement of the Savantha storyline, not necessarily like the heightened drama. It was more like a spiritual resolution for Mulder rather than a plot resolution, I thought. I can see why people wouldn't like it as a continuation of the conspiracy storyline, but I thought it was supposed to be more personal. And I, too, like the way that it kind of sidelined into the mythology after that first episode.
I just wish they'd done both. Both a personal spiritual resolution for Mulder and a plot resolution for the Samantha arc. That was a little bit more in keeping with what came before it.
That certainly makes sense because they set us up for 6+ years with this is what happens to Samantha, and then, you know, over here, this is what actually happened. Okay, I'm going to read 2 back-to-back because it kind of makes me laugh. Deanna Ferrari said, Requiem would have been a great end. And then Kathy Irwin Glinsky said, Existence would have been the perfect ending. Season 9 was a mistake. So, guys, endings. What episode would you like the X-Files to have ended on?
I would have ended on Requiem, I think. I think I just would have changed it so that Mulder wasn't abducted. But yeah.
I agree with that. I would have ended the original with Mulder. I mean, I don't see how you can have Mulder abducted and have a satisfying ending without anything to come, unless you're going to certainly do a movie or something right after that. And I certainly, as I said, would not have Scully being pregnant. But I think Mulder not being abducted, Scully not being pregnant, and have Requiem as the ending would be, of the ones that we saw for the series, that would be ideal. I detest Existence. I hate to say that. I think there are moments about it that I like, but any ending that has to do with Mulder and Scully being like more in that sort of like domestic sense, it feels to me like they're giving up rather than being reinvigorated on their mission. And I kind of think that's who they are, is people on a mission of some sort or investigation of some sort. And it's going to change throughout their lives. But I don't think that like staying at home with the baby is really like what's meant to be for them in a way. So that's kind of the heart of my displeasure with Existence. The end of The Truth I like well enough because you see that they're going somewhere. And actually the end of I Want to Believe is probably my favorite. Like I couldn't have come up with a better and more meaningful ending than that, I think. And I would think that would appeal to people that, you know, those people that want to see them together, as well as the people that want to see them kind of like reawaken to whatever their purposes are in life.
Okay, let me see what else we have. Kurt North says, I can never get my head around the metal vertebrae in Existence. There are probably others that come close, like Doggett and Mulder's death, but as moments I think go too far for me, it has to be Billy Miles' vertebrae building. I just can't suspend my disbelief for it. I enjoyed the Terminator-esque feel to the episode, and the episode itself is really good. I just have to close my eyes for about 20 seconds, and I'm fine. I don't even mind the garbage compactor, just the reanimation from nothing really gets to me. And that's the thing about watching whatever you're watching. If something takes you out of it, you've lost a bit of your magic. Right? Has there been anything like that for you guys where you're just like, no?
I thought that was a really cool image, but I can see what he means. And I think, to go briefly way back to the beginning, what Naomi was saying about Fight the Future, I do like it. I don't mean to bash it. It was just some of the things that had been based earlier in scientific realism, I thought, I don't know, having this alien is kind of, you know, making it a little bit more about spectacle. And that was like the same thing, I think, that I would agree with in Kurt's comment, is it takes you out of that world, maybe? Is that what you
mean? Yeah.
Okay.
In that sense, the show jumps the shark in different ways. It can jump the shark in terms of the sci-fi, when there's some really weak sci-fi, then you feel like this is not X-Files caliber. It can also jump the shark in terms of the characters. Speaking of I Want to Believe, what really didn't work for me about that is how Scully behaved in that movie. She starts out by pressuring Mulder to get back into it. And then once he gets into the X-Files, she says, I have to leave. Didn't make sense to me. So that took me out of the movie. I thought, this isn't Scully. This is too inconsistent and irrational to be Scully.
The funny thing is that there were moments in all the seasons, you know, like Mulder's getting attacked by a cat, you know, like you're not really believing that, but you're going along with it. But at some point, I guess the shark jump is when you're like, and now you're rolling your eyes every episode when you see something like that. So where you usually used to be able to buy into it, you're not really doing it anymore.
I also think there's a higher standard for the Chris Carter mythology episodes and the movies. So I wouldn't think the show jumped the shark in, you know, a weak episode from all the seasons have weak episodes, but those aren't jumping the shark moments, because the bar is lower for Monster of the Week episodes over a 22-23 episode season. But when it's sweeps or mythology episodes, or the revival, when there are far fewer episodes, then the standard's higher. So when it's not met, we feel that disappointment much more.
Michelle Milbauer says, they jumped the shark in any episode involving the Williams storyline.
I agree. I like William, I guess, like from I Want to Believe through the revival, as a sort of like a memory of loss or them dealing with regret, but as an actual character or plot device, I don't think it worked.
Yeah, more for William. Kaylee Raymond voted for the ninth season. Ending with Mulder and Scully holding William leaves us questioning and wondering so many possibilities. I do think they had to have an X-File kid. William, in my opinion, fit perfectly into the story as a how did he get here sort of thing, and then wondering if he would be alien or not, because we were all wondering, how did he get here? Now, that being said, do I like what they turn William into? Not so much, but that's for another feed. Yeah, what about what William turned into, guys? Shark jumping, not shark jumping, interesting way to go with him, interesting spin-off idea. What do you guys think?
In terms of him being Smoking Man's son, I think that's too much for me. I think My Struggle 3 in general is too much for me, but I didn't mind what they did with him in season 11, actually. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was different. It wasn't what I expected, but I kind of ended up liking it at the end.
So did I. I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm. I liked what they did with the like the communicated visions through seizure and the connection to Scully. That really piqued my interest.
I liked the fact that he wasn't a perfect little angel, as teenage boys aren't, especially ones who feel they're different and know they're different, as William clearly did. What I don't like is the hint that his moral failings are due to his father being cigarette smoking man, which Chris Carter hinted at. And, you know, going back to what we would change about the show, I would change those.
Wait a minute,
two
we
things.
Didn't get there yet.
Oh, sorry. Well, just to reiterate what's already been said, I did not like that decision.
She's changing those. Just mark that down for future use later in the podcast. Let's see. Carrot Wend Foley said, for my money, season 8 was a very good season, even though I would personally have preferred if season 7 had been the last one and had ended differently. But I think season 9 is firmly in shark jumping territory all the way through. The reduction of Scully to fretting about William, the absence of Mulder, the wretched voiceover letters, and the FBI super soldier infiltration storyline with no plan for resolution pushed season 9 into shark jumping for me. It felt like the creators had just given up caring about constructing a real narrative and knew they just had to come up with a bunch of episodes. Oh, the voiceover letters.
Oh, yeah. I actually broke my ankle it was several days before that episode aired, and when I was watching that and they got to the voiceover, I thought, this is worse than the broken bone. I was a bit dramatic.
I love that. That is the best response yet. Okay. Well, since we sort of veered into our next question, let's just move on to our next question. And thanks, everybody, for doing the mailbag. I wish we could read each and every one except for Natalie Say, who said, "Lost Art of Forehead Sweat." I'm not sorry. I didn't get to read that one. Okay, that wasn't a shark jump to me, but she found it to be such a waste of time. But that's what's so great about The X-Files. We all love this show so much, and we all have such different opinions about it. I love that. Okay, question 2. What would you change about The X-Files? I think there is some recall of Chris Carter once saying there was one thing he would change about the story, but that he would never tell what it is. But guys, what are your one things? We'll start with Marlene.
Oh, mine is going to be redundant. I would change the pregnancy storyline. I'm sure I'll think of some other little detail that I also would change, but that's the primary plot thing that I would change.
Okay. I think we have some of that in our mailbag for this portion. Naomi?
I would change CSM being both Mulder's father and William's father. I thought he was enough of a bad guy without that. It's a bit perverse and hackneyed, and it didn't provide much fodder in terms of character development. I don't think we ever see Mulder kind of wrestling with that, and I found Bill Mulder a much more interesting father figure, in that he was, like Mulder, not always doing the right thing and wrestling with moral choices while interacting with this larger system, this vast conspiracy.
I thought it was hackneyed when it was just Mulder. And then they did it again.
Right. It was a little too Star Wars, I think.
We did get a couple of Star Wars references on that. Michael, what would you change about The X-Files?
I think that's a loaded question, but if I have to answer one for the podcast, I think I would have changed the myth arc in the revival a bit. I think I would have brought the show back and made that more the center of why they come back. I think I would have done something similar even to the season 10 and 11 comic books that they did right before the revival happened that are no longer canon. I think I would have done something like that.
I think, well, there are so many things, and when we get through mailbag, I'm like, yeah, they should have done that, or yeah, they should have done that, but I always thought that they shouldn't have killed Krycek off, and if he should have come back as one of the super soldiers, as at the very least, was one of the theories that I was running with for a long, long amount of time.
That would have been good.
That's a good one.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Skinner thinks he killed him, but he didn't really kill him. That's why the body wasn't there, you know, when they went to go look for him. So let's see what our friends and neighbors have to say. Meredith Roberts said what we basically just said. Cut the cigarette smoking man being Mulder's father stuff. I've never cared for it, and I've never really seen any purpose for it. So then why wasn't he chosen to be abducted as a child and then returned and raised with Jeffrey? His name was originally on the file under Samantha's, so why would Bill Mulder choose Samantha to go? Tina says Bill made the choice. It just makes no sense, and it's just a ripoff of Star Wars. See? There's that Star Wars thing again. And then I loved Fred's answer to this, Fred Bradiger's answer. My fan wank, and I love that word, on it, is that Bill had chosen Mulder, put him on the file, but cigarette-smoking man forced him out of it, maybe by pointing out that he's not really his to give. That also helped me settle why Bill was such a dick to Mulder all the time. Both of his parents seem to have a touch of resentment toward him, like it's his fault y'all are jerks, man. I'm sure he wishes they'd taken him instead, as well as world's greatest parents. But yeah, they could have just left all of that family drama out so easily, and it'd be a smoother story. I get that. Yeah, it highlights how insidious cigarette-smoking man is, but it's a needless complication. Besides, it would make more sense if it were Samantha that he actually fathered. So I like the response, but I appreciate Meredith's point, too, because, like I just said, I thought cigarette-smoking man being Mulder's father is very heavy-handed.
I think it is, too. I thought in Talitha Kumi, when they're in the hospital, and the cigarette-smoking man said something to Mulder about, like, I've known your mother since before you were born, Fox. I like that suggestion, because I think at that time, and I had just started watching the show in the third season, so to me that was kind of a new concept, but I thought it was interesting as a suggestion, but I thought just kind of the pat acceptance of it later made it a little bit much.
Right. Does anybody think like the concept of them working with this? I like the hints of it, like you just said, more than I do the actuality of it. You know, I love when they hinted at things more than just saying them outright, which is, I guess, my best definition of me when it comes to Mulder and Scully. You know, I'm not a shipper, but I like the hints that they are the only person meant for the other one. I just don't want to see it play out. I just want the hints.
I agree with that.
I don't like the overt romantic aspect of it. That was my whole other podcast, though, so I won't believe right here.
I also don't have an issue with Mulder being cigarette-smoking man's son as much. I don't know. Maybe it's just an idea of nature versus nurture that I think is interesting. The fact that he was raised by Bill Mulder made him be more like Bill Mulder than his biological father, so I kind of liked that concept. I don't like it with William. I think it's too much. I think it's dumb, quite frankly, and I think it's been done before. So,
boy, they really raised the roof with that one. I mean, they really made people mad for a number of reasons, not just story plotline, you know, like Me Too movement, and you know, they just blew it all up there, and then they blew it up again in the, you know, series finale.
I think the Me Too stuff was already baked in that the way she got pregnant and Dr. Parenti and her abduction, that had already happened. So this just felt like cheap shock value, you know, a kind of pathetic attempt to get more viewers and make some headlines.
Yeah, that's sort of what I meant there.
I liked the connection to Anna Mee, because I always thought at that time, I thought that's exactly what happened. Like, not him being the biological father, but I always thought that that was a strong possibility that Cigarette Smoking Man had done something to Scully. And I thought that Mulder and Scully, that was the one thing I liked about Existence, about, like, not, you know, really knowing exactly what happened, but Mulder is sort of accepting whatever did happen, you know, is the truth, not necessarily the facts. But I thought that in season 11, it seemed to me that in Ghoulie, they were kind of aware that something had happened, that she would have been, you know, manipulated by the cigarette smoking man and so forth. Not necessarily that the cigarette smoking man was his biological father, because I think that's a step too much. But I do think that the connections to Anna Mee made a lot of sense.
Yes, definitely. At least there was a through line there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see what else. Adam Silva says, no Scully in season 9, the lone gunman don't die. Michael Little said, Scully giving William away was a huge mistake in my opinion, and I am not a shipper, nor do I have a big attachment to baby William. I think it was a mistake to reveal he was special in the opening season 9 episodes. Hindsight is 20/20. The issue there, I guess, was, you know, what do you do with William? You have a baby in a series that is not about a baby. you know, unless it's supernaturally related. So do you make them supernaturally related or you get them off the canvas? And they did both.
I think they could have made him like Maggie Scully, just, you know, a family member who's not, who doesn't necessarily have to be the center of the plot line of the season. What really bothered me is that there was no good reason for her to give him up, because Jeffrey Spender had supposedly disabled his supernatural powers in that episode. So it's not just that they did it, but how they did it didn't work.
I agree. I don't think there was an overriding immediate reason at that time that was any different than anything that had happened before. It was almost like she just got, like, granted she was very concerned, but like she sort of got tired of those sort of the same thing happening over and over. You know, I didn't see anything that really predicated.
Which strikes me as really unrealistic, because giving up a baby would be an incredibly hard thing to do. You'd think there would be a deciding moment. Didn't work for me.
I understand, like, not wanting to have a baby and like as the plot point, but maybe that's the thing, is that they had done that too much. And something like an episode like Improbable, which I love that episode, where they show him, but it's at the end of the episode and he's not a major part of it, and Scully is still working and solving cases and so forth. I suppose that could have worked.
Exactly.
You could have always done the rapid aging thing too, if you really wanted to make him a part of the plot line and not just be a baby.
Like, have him be an older, like, he is rapidly aging, or just having it
gone by? No. He's just growing quickly, and maybe halfway through the season, he's already a teenager, and he's learning that he has all these abilities.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Wait a minute, that's very Mork and Mindy, but you guys aren't going to get that reference, because you don't know the jumping the shark reference.
I know that one.
Okay. Well, that was aging backwards, right?
Yes.
Jonathan Winters. Okay, let's see what else we have. Maura Yeager said, the total retcon of the aliens' involvement, the abandonment of a storyline in which we'd invested so much time, and the brief introduction of the Syndicate 2.0 was jarring. Also, the overemphasis on and then about-face of the Williams story was annoying. So, yeah, the retconning of the aliens' involvement. At some point, this wasn't really a show about aliens anymore.
I always liked more the conspiracy, the sort of, kind of like what you said, like what happens in the shadows, I guess. Like, is it alien involvement, or is it just the government and the entire conspiracy, you know, through line of that, and more the conspiratorial parts when it was sort of darker and, like, you're wondering, where does it go? Like, I think Naomi was saying, like, is it national or international, or how far does it go? Rather than making it, like, overtly about aliens and then saying, nope, that's not what it was.
Well, I guess because, you know, we had this date, and then the date passed, and then what happened? You know, and it was kind of like, nothing happened. We just forgot about it. I like the description that the planet had exhausted its resources, and we weren't a viable resource for them anymore. So they said, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, I thought that was dumb. I was just like, really? Really? After all this time?
I thought it was interesting. At first I thought it was kind of dumb too, or preachy or something. But then I thought, it's kind of these people that, like, in power, you know, on the side or in the shadows, manipulating these interests or causes that are concerns for people in order to gain power for themselves. And so I kind of made up in my own mind, like, that was my analysis of what was going on. Some of the things that, especially like the things that Erica Price was saying, is like, she's, you know, using these things that people are, you know, I guess, like, adamant about in order to draw their concern, in order to give her power, not for the issues in themselves. But again, I made all that up as my explanation.
How do we handle, how would you have handled the aliens in the interim of what we saw and what we didn't see? Like, what do you think should have happened there?
That's, I honestly don't really know. I just know that I would have probably just brought them back, or made them push back their date or something like that. I honestly don't know. I just know that I didn't like what they did.
That's a totally valid point. I totally agree with you. They just should have addressed it better than they actually did.
Yeah. And even in season 10, they kind of make reference to the fact that a lot of what we saw in the earlier seasons, what we knew to be true, what was kind of talked about at the end of The Truth, when Mulder was giving his testimony, they kind of shove it under the rug and say, oh yeah, it was just men the whole time. It had nothing really to do with aliens. It gave off the wrong vibe to me, at least.
Okay, let me see what else we have. Valerie Kelly said more mention of Emily. You know, when, I hate to interrupt her comment, but there was a character named Emily on the show, and I think at least we should get a Scully reaction to the name Emily. If we're not going to do anything about it ever, is fine. But the name Emily should, you know, when you hear a name of that's familiar to you, of somebody you've had a previous experience with, you have kind of a reaction. And so I sort of wish Scully would have a reaction to hearing the name Emily rather than just saying it like it's nothing. Anyway, sorry, Valerie Kelly. She also said more Doggett and Reyes, either an explanation for Reyes or she was never with cigarette smoking man. Scully's second pregnancy should have been after, I want to believe, when it was more realistic time-wise. So Naomi, Reyes, tell me what your thoughts are on Reyes and what they did to her for season 10 and 11.
You know, I wasn't that upset about it because I was never really attached to Reyes in the first place. I'm all about Mulder and Scully, so I gradually checked out of the show emotionally, even though I watched every episode as it aired through the end of season 9. Whenever Reyes and Doggett were on the screen, I was just like, let's wait till Mulder comes back. rewatching, I can appreciate the stories a little bit more because I'm not on pins and needles waiting to see how the story will resolve. But they still don't do a lot for me. So I'm sorry about the way they treated Reyes. I don't think they justified her decision to side with CSM. But the writers don't justify a lot of things. So,
well, it's true. The biggest problem I've always had with that is she is, to me, the most forthright character that we've seen on the canvas. Look at how she stands up for Mulder at the end of the series run. You know, she goes into that meeting and she tells them, look what these two people have been through. And, you know, she really has this big speech where she will say anything, no matter what kind of trouble it gets her into. And to have her be a lackey for cigarette smoking man with no other impetus, at least, you know, all right, give us a hint, it's Doggett, so we can roll our eyes at that one or something. I was very angry about that with the revival.
I'm with Naomi on not being extremely invested in her before, so it didn't bother me. And in fact, I thought it made her more interesting as a character after my struggle too. I really thought that showing her sort of temptation, you know, to survive, gave her some complexity and gave her more to do. I just didn't think she had that much like of value to do, I guess, in the first series, but I do think that she was kind of a pure character in some ways, like in her intention, and so it didn't make complete sense. And I also thought that coming out of my struggle too, you know, when we find out it's Scully's vision, that maybe that was something like a portent of like something that, you know, was going to be staved off or not happen, or I don't know. I thought there was going to be something more done with it than what was done, but I do think there was like a part of that made her more interesting to me.
I'm kind of with them. I don't really have any emotional attachment to Reyes. I didn't really
this
like.
This is so sad.
I'm sorry. No, I didn't like how they handled her in the revival seasons. I thought it was kind of a betrayal of her character a little bit, but in the long
there
run,
we go.
In the long
that's
run,
what
it
I'm looking
really
for.
Do a whole lot for me.
No, you know, I understand it. It actually took me a long time to get back to the series. You know, it took me like 10 years before I came back. Initially, I was like, everyone, when's Mulder going to be on again? You know, and then some time passes and you watch these episodes and there are some really great season 9 episodes. Of course, there are a lot of really dog season 9 episodes too. So you have to kind of wade through it. Episodes like Audrey Pauly, I just adore this person and want so much for her, and I want the world for her because she would stand up for anyone in the world. And that's what I appreciate so much about. But I will save that for the Reyes podcast, which I'll probably be doing myself because I won't be able to find anybody else. All right, let's get a little light here. Russell Hugo said, what would he change about the X-Files? Have a decent non-comedy haunted house story. How the Ghost Stole Christmas is good, but isn't spooky. Remove the super soldier plotline. Remove the William plotline. Let Doggett and Reyes take over after season 8. Oh, I'm calling Russell for my Reyes podcast. Cut Gibson praise. Lessen the Mulder doubt arc of Gethsemane, etc. Cut the large spaceship finale from Fight the Future. I predict this will be controversial. I predict it too, based on who's on this podcast. And building on Clara's comments from the Nisi podcast, reduce cigarette smoking man's role and keep him more shadowy for longer. Okay, there's a lot to get in there. Large spaceship finale, Fight the Future fans in this podcast. What do you think of that? Do you think it was a great ending? Do you think it was an... You tell me.
It's not my favorite aspect of the movie. I can see why they did it. It's something that had worked before many times. I think they were writing for people like me who hadn't seen the show before, and they thought, this trope works, let's do it again, but bigger. So did I love the second half of the movie? The Scully in peril and those kind of familiar tropes being trod out again. As an 11-year-old, yes. Now, having seen the whole series, they're not as thrilling to me, but I think they worked in that they hooked it hooked me as a new fan. So it worked on that level.
I think Mulder needed it. I think he needed to see that ship, especially with everything he had been through in... I think it's season 5 where he has the whole doubt arc, right? Am I wrong?
Yes. No, okay. That's correct.
Okay, I thought so. I think after all of that, I think he really needed that win. I think he really needed that push to continue investigating into the unknown, into the things that he had believed for so much of his life that he had been questioning all throughout season 5. And so I think ending with that, especially after the loss of losing the X-Files at the end of season 5, and now the win of him getting the X-Files back by the end of the movie. I think they needed those wins to keep going, and I think it really helped establish his character, and even Scully's to a point, from the sense that she, like, never sees anything, and he always sees it, and it just pushes him even further in his pursuit of the truth. And I don't know. I don't know if it was necessary, but I think... Well, actually, I think it is kind of necessary. I'm changing my mind as I'm talking about it.
That, you know, I love when that happens too. You don't have to keep going in the same thing. If something else strikes you, I'm jump out with that.
No, because when they were talking, I was like, I don't know, because I don't like it as a literal thing, like to show the spaceship. But as a part of Mulder's story, I completely agree that it is kind of necessary. It's sort of like a restoral of his faith that we've seen many times. It was just done in a bigger way then, you know. So I can see that. And I also like when he, like, wants to show Scully, even though they're lying there on the ice, he's like, look at this, you know. I thought that was a good moment.
It was so cheesy, though, how, of course, she doesn't see it, but he does. They've done that so many times.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, if you watch closed captioning on that, she says she sees it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh. Interesting.
My sister got me into putting closed captioning on things, and I never realized it before. And then, you know, I'm looking at, whoa, she says she saw it.
That's what I thought she said. And then she questioned it, I guess. And
then there's kind of revisionist history. And yeah. Okay, let's see. Anna Bastow said she would have liked a Halloween episode. Maybe Chris Carter felt it was too obvious a choice and too cliche, but I feel the show missed that opportunity.
That's true.
Yep. I agree.
Mm-hmm. I agree too. I think that would have been great. I love Halloween anyway, and I think the tone would have worked really well. The tone they could have done. And maybe the history too. Like Mulder could have spouted some sort of Halloween history, you know, while on the case.
They had so many creative types who crafted these amazing episodes that you'd think somebody would have come up with something, but maybe it was on the bulletin board for like ever and just no one thought of a way to do it. Okay, Sarah Ford's more serious. Get comfortable. This is a long one. I wish the X-Files would have had the courage to make change and stick to it. I feel like all the problems in the series boil down to Chris Carter being afraid to change the formula of the show so much so that character growth and plot lines couldn't advance. It's like they would start off on all these promising story arcs or seed these cool ideas and then get afraid and reverse course before any of them could come to fruition. Scully's pregnancies, 3 if you count Emily, all were basically reversed. Cigarette Smoking Man's 4, I think, on-screen deaths all reset. Scully's unnecessary presence in season 9. And then she went on and said, at some point we need to see characters, situations, plot lines grow and change and move things along. Compare X-Files to a show like Buffy, for instance, which is very much a successor heir to the X-Files. While not as strong at the start, Buffy ended much better than X-Files because it was willing to let Buffy grow up and make tough decisions. Characters died. Buffy's mom, her emotional rock, died. Her surrogate father figure, Giles, moved. A main character became evil. There's a lot of validity to that, and I think it's because it went on so long that you're not really sure how they can get to different places, but they should have at least been able to grow. Like, look at Supernatural. Like, do any of you watch Supernatural?
Yes, sadly. I still watch it.
I finally stopped watching. I finally gave up. But that went on for a very long time, and they had a clear Bible for a while, and then they finished that arc, and then they went a different direction, and now I don't know how they do it now. So
they reverse everything they did in those first 5 seasons. That's what they do.
That's the thing. Like, you're kind of messing with it. So, Michael, you address what Sarah said. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you somewhat agree?
I do somewhat agree. I think, obviously, like, Buffy is a different situation, too, because you have a creator who, for the most part, kind of knew where he wanted at least his characters to go. Maybe not the story, but his characters. I don't think Chris Carter ever had an idea of where he wanted Mulder and Scully to actually go or end up, or any of the supporting characters as well. Supernatural, again, is another interesting example because the creator of that show left after the 5th season, and so his characters changed the way he wanted them to change before he left the show. And afterwards, they were like, okay, what do we do now? And I think X-Files kind of followed a similar downfall in that way.
Jumping the shark, some might say.
Some might say, yeah.
I just want to add that of all shows, the X-Files needed a Bible.
Yes.
Anything involving a conspiracy and a mythology, I mean, it stops working if there's no thread. There's no consistency. If something that happened in one episode can be reversed in the next. What keeps you going is that desire to get another piece of the puzzle. And if the puzzle pieces get scrambled, what's the point?
I would say I would have preferred just consistency with the past. If you're going to open up something and you don't have a plan and you own that and you're like, oh, here's what we've done, you kind of have like made your choices and constrained yourself. And I think just even following through on what they've done, whether they not they had a set plan on what was going to happen, would have been helpful. But I don't see Mulder and Scully as like evolving throughout the series. I don't know that they changed dramatically. I think Scully more so than Mulder, but I think that they kind of, you know, they changed throughout the middle years and then kind of came back around in season 6 and 7 in a way. And then, you know, maybe like in the later years were a different way. And then in the revival, of course, they're older. I think they're sort of like, I don't know. Like, there's something about like aging and time moving on and seeing how they develop that's still interesting to me. So I would say that most of that at least rings true. But in terms of the overall storyline, I think that having something that's a little more solid and making choices and staying loosely within that, but so as to allow for, you know, I mean, I think Chris Carter likes to incorporate, you know, current events and things like that. So he has to be a little more open in that regard.
Let's do a couple more and then we'll wrap up. I loved what Jeremy Daniels said. He said, "I wish I could remove that exotic horn noise that Mark Snow adds to every episode that deals with other cultures." Ha ha. Asian people show up in Nisei, cue foreign horn. African character appears in Teleco, cue foreign horn, etc. Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Jeremy on that one.
That's hilarious and true.
That's so funny, yeah. And I didn't think about it at those times when I was watching. I mean, I noticed that sound, but of course I didn't think about it being, you know, until looking back.
And Stephen Lovins, the perfect note to end up on. "I just wish the show had a vague game plan and had a proper ending."
I think we all agree on that one.
I agree with that.
Yep. Thank you, Stephen, for doing that so succinctly. So before we wrap up, let's find out where listeners can find everyone on the internet. Marlene?
My Twitter account is Marlene, M-A-R-L-E-N-E, so my first name, and then my initials, M-H-S.
Okay, Naomi?
I'm Naomi Miller with no E, like Tumblr.
Oh, okay. On Twitter?
On Twitter, yeah.
On Twitter. Okay, Michael?
Yeah, I am at MJPetty7 on Twitter, so MJPETTY7.
And I think all of us are always around the X-Files basement on Facebook. I also do an X-Files rewatch blog with my sister called Sibling Cinema at Blogger, and we can also be found with that moniker on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, without an E, and Pinterest. Thanks, everybody, for doing this roundtable with me. You were great. And thank you for everybody who submitted mailbag items. I think if we didn't get to say yours expressly, I think we covered, like, all the terrain. So thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, as always, trust no one.
The X-Cast, an X-Files podcast, is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support the X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXCast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXCast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IAmWillAye.